Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show. Fox Sports Radio. I don't know if you can tell, but the boys are back together again. I think it's been 4 months since I've seen the beautiful eyes of one John Ramos. The backwards hat of my man Dan Beyer. And Ryan, music looks different. Oh, that's Gavin. That's Gavin. Welcome in. It's the Doug Gottlieb Show, live and direct. Now all together in Southern California. That's inside the Beltway. You don't really care because you couldn't really tell, which the whole thing actually is a win for me against my bosses. But nonetheless, let's not divulge any of that stuff. We got a lot to get to. We got a great show for you. Hey, remember that Super League story from soccer, like the last 2 days? that's over. We'll get to that in a second. We also have Kevin Clark from The Ringer will join us. Mike Sando from The Athletic. Jason Smith, my good friend, who I co-host the Dan Patrick Show with occasionally, with the hottest of hot takes. He got rightfully ratioed last night because his take on Steph Curry's recent dominance is, not been well received, even by me. And I love Jason. We all throw out a wild pitch every now and again, even the best in the business. Plus, Charles Robinson joined us. Man, four great guests. And we're trying to get Darren Revelle to figure out why the estate of Kobe Bryant is getting out of the business with Nike. Nike. I have suspicions and I'll get to it. But before we get there, let me start with this. Mike Tomlin signs a contract extension with the Pittsburgh Steelers. The same Mike Tomlin, of course, on the hot seat a little bit in terms of the public eye, going back 2 years ago when they had the rotating circus at quarterback. And he gets an extension, a 3-year extension. He's 145-78-1 as Steelers head coach. Now, our own Terry Bradshaw and our own Colin Cowherd have called into question his actual coaching acumen at various times. I have been a defender of Tomlin, not because I'm a Steeler fan. I'm not a Steeler fan. I respect the Steelers. Incredibly popular team. And one of those teams that has, that everyone says we have a nation. Wildcat Nation. I want to thank. There's no Wildcat Nation. There's a Steeler Nation. Go to a Steeler game on the road and you'd be like, wow, there's more Steeler fans than there are. Pick your team. Now, the logic behind that is not that there are so many Pittsburgh expatriates. It's more that Pittsburgh, by my estimation, Pittsburgh has been good in the great in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s and 2010s. They've had great seasons, people, and they got cool culture. There's a certain kind of throwback mentality to them. But more than anything, like when you're good for that long or various spots of that long, you're going to be popular. You just are. There's a Steeler Nation. So they will continue to have Mike Tomlin as their coach for the foreseeable future. And if you call into question Mike Tomlin for, like, what does he actually do on the sidelines? What is he actually? He's got the defensive background. This is what I have determined is one of the keys to understanding bosses and people in power. And I said this about Roger Goodell. What do they really do? What is their actual job? This is the same thing with athletic directors. You know, you'll get this time of year, you'll get college basketball coaches hired and fired, and an athletic director will hire a search committee, and you'll get writer guy or fan guy go, why you need to spend $100,000 in a search committee when it's the athletic director's job to hire the coach? It is. You're right. It is. It's part of the job. What does an athletic director actually do? Well, they have to run the entire athletic department. They have to raise money for the athletic department. And then they have to manage the people under them. And whatever your strengths are, well, you execute on your own. Whatever your weaknesses are, you hire people. Right? That's, people ask me all the time, like, well, if you're going to be a best college basketball coach, what would you know about it? Who would you hire? I'd hire people who know what I don't know, period. And why do you hire a search firm? So you hire people who know what you don't know. Is he got any baggage? What's his contract situation? You know, do a pre-interview so that by the time I bring him in here, we know if he's even got a shot or we're wasting our time. The athletic director usually has two main jobs. One is to run the entire athletic department, and two is to raise money for the athletic department. And if your strength is raising money and managing people and not hiring and firing and finding the next head coach, well, then of course you can still very well do your job. Oftentimes the athletic director doesn't have the power to make the final call because the president of the school sometimes wants to make the ultimate call, or the Board of Regents. I bring it up because there's lots of jobs that people have that no one actually knows what they do. What does the guy actually do? Right? Like the chef at a restaurant. You go into a restaurant and you're like, man, I heard Chef Doug is making the filet mignon today. Now, Chef Doug may be back there with the hat on and barking out orders, but as we've come to learn from all these cooking shows, they probably didn't actually cook your steak. You know why? Because that's not the job of the chef. Right? When the actual chef cooks your steak, you're like, this is amazing. Right? But that guy's got to run the entire kitchen. That guy's got to make sure, right? That guy's got to manage the things that he's got to manage. And if he's the greatest steak cooker of all time, that's what he does. But he doesn't necessarily plate. He doesn't necessarily do the sides. He definitely doesn't wait on the table. It's the other day, I took my son to Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. And he likes medium or hot. Right? That's what he likes. He likes, but he doesn't like the dry. He likes the wet, medium or hot. Well, I don't know what your wings order is. Just in case you're ordering wings for me, I like the Chipotle dry rub. I like the lemon pepper dry. I like the salt and vinegar dry. You're like, those aren't buffalo wings. You're right. They are wings, and I like them that way. That's not the point. The point is that the waitress, am I allowed to call her a waitress? Is that anyway sexually demeaning? It does not mean she was a woman who was waiting on our table. Thus, the term is waitress. Okay. So the waitress brought the wings out, and there was a paucity of sauce on my lad's wings. Right? And when we go to fine dining like Buffalo Wild Wings, damn it, we want the amount of sauce on the wings. We don't want it to be drowning in the wings. It was like soup, but somewhere in between soup and dry is the perfect mix. There wasn't enough. And so when we saw the lady, he was saying, ma'am. And I said, hey, sometimes you just raise a finger, just one little finger, make eye contact. It's all you have to do. She makes eye contact, comes back. He very politely says, ma'am, there's not as much sauce as I would like on it. Anyway, she was incredibly nice. It helped her with her tip. And she brought back. And he's like, do you think she was mad? And I said, no. You know why? Because she didn't cook the damn wings. That's not what her job is. It's one of those things that people have a problem with when they go to a restaurant. You remember restaurants, the places we now go back down and sit down at? You're like, oh my God, this is so cool to have somebody bring me out food and bring back food. This is incredible to be out of the pandemic a little bit. Anyway, her job is to make sure that you get what you want. That's her job. And to wait on a bunch of tables and to communicate between the kitchen and you. That's her job. I bring it up because Mike Tomlin gets a 3-year contract. And people are like, what does he actually do? Well, what is a head coach's job in the NFL? To hire a competent staff, to pay attention to every room in the building, to communicate with the quarterback, the leadership on the roster, the leadership with coaches as well. Does he have to be some savant in terms of his defensive pressure schemes or his offensive hot reads? No. So many times people don't know what a head coach's job is. A head coach's job is to, like the quarterback, be the face of the franchise, the leader of the team, to get 53 guys and 46 on game day pulling in the right direction, to understand and implement the right game plan, but allow his coaches to coach under his watch. Of course, Tomlin deserves a contract extension. Look at the record. They've never had a bad season. They've had a disappointing season, but never a bad season. And it's usually disappointing because your expectations of the Steelers is high, not just because of Ben Roethlisberger, because of the historic success of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Think of what happened to the Packers when they lost Aaron Rodgers. No matter how well-run an organization is, go and look at their record. Now go and look at the Pittsburgh Steelers, 18-15 without Big Ben, and no real backup of note the past couple of years. Duck Hodges started several games for you. The reason his nickname was Duck happened to be every time he threw a football, it was so wild, you had to duck. I'm kidding, that's not really the reason, but it did work if you actually watched him play quarterback. The only people that have problems with Mike Tomlin, head coach of the Steelers, an organization that's had three head coaches in their lifespan, and the other two are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and Tomlin, whenever he retires or is fired shortly thereafter, will be inducted in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, are people who don't know what his job requires. He leads, he organizes, he stands in front of men and gets them to fall in line, and then he goes in front of the media and paints the smartest, rosiest, most positive, but honest picture he can for the media. It's not a job necessarily that requires play calling. It's not a job that requires an immense aptitude for X and O on a side of the ball that you're not familiar with. It's a CEO job. And of course, just like athletic directors, just like chefs, just like waitstaff, just like it, you can focus on the things that you know best, but you also have to let your sous chef. You also have to let your associate athletic directors direct. You also have to let your search firms search. You have to let your assistant coaches coach. Needless to say, I approve of the Mike Tomlin extension. I mean, dude, they consider last year, as much as it was disappointing, they lost two of their, Bud Dupree and Bush, right? They lost two of their most important front seven defensive players on a team that's built around their defense. Their quarterback is tinkering on over the hill. Their offensive line was a mess. They couldn't run the football, and yet they still found a way to keep it together in a really, really, really competitive division. That's Mike Tomlin. Never has a bad year. Been disappointing years, never a bad year.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. I don't apologize. I actually no longer have to apologize for idiocy of television shows when people say things that contradict their other statements, right? So there are plenty of people who are making contradictory statements about Steph Curry, right? Like I heard some, I think it was Skip Bayless. We're going to do that in What the Fox Said. We should get that for What the Fox Said. Okay. Where he's, you know, James Harden's a better all around player. Like, okay, but the whole idea of Skip's whole thing is, well, LeBron's not clutch. Jordan was clutch, right? And it's the same thing with Tom Brady. Like, Tom Brady is the greatest because of what he does. And how come then it's a, I like to make congruent arguments. It's not a congruent argument to say all those things and then say, hey, James Harden's better than Steph Curry, when James Harden hasn't done anything in the biggest of games in the NBA. Steph's been amazing. And what happens with people is when Steph came out of college, he left a year early, and I popped on SportsCenter, I think from my house, and I just didn't like it at the time. I thought he needed, because he hadn't played the point, except for his last year there, he played the point. The previous two, he did not at Davidson. And look, the way in which he played, the lack of size and at times athleticism and the shot selection, the way he played, how much he played off the ball, I thought there were other, namely Ricky Rubio and Johnny Flynn had more upside. Rubio stayed overseas for 2 years, obviously. They're both, by the way, Flynn both drafted ahead of him. So at least one general manager who drafted both of them agreed with me. And what happened with Johnny Flynn was he's out of the league, well, because he had a debilitating hip injury. And when he played in a system where he played in the triangle, which is a terrible fit for how he played. But we also hadn't seen him play man-to-man defense because he played at Syracuse. So there's a lot that went into it. But people like to roast me because, like, well, you said he'd be out of the league. No, I didn't. I thought he was going to be a version of a Jeff Hornacek. Could handle the ball, could really shoot. Put him with another point guard, he's a very good player for a long time. Go back and look. You can Google my draft board from that year, and I believe that's where I put him. Obviously, he's way better than that, right? I mean, he's a two-time MVP. He's, if not the greatest shooter we've ever seen, he's in any conversation. By the way, that's a tease for what's coming in game time. But over the last 11 games, he's averaged 40.8 points per game. This is average 10-game stretch. 40.8 points, that's 41 points. 6.2 rebounds per game. 4.4 assists per game, 55% field goal, 50% three-point, 90% free throw shooter. He's made 10 threes in four of his last five games. Like, these are crazy numbers. The rest of the NBA combined has done it five times the entire season. What's different about Steph is really threefold. One, most guys shoot well going one way. Jordan going right. Kobe going right. Most righties actually shoot better off the dribble going left. Some guys are catch and shoot guys. He catches and shoots. He goes right. He goes left. He's got the entire bag. It's crazy. And he scored 49 points. Most of them against his brother, by the way, which is kind of funny, right? You're like, oh, why wasn't Seth in the NBA as originally, and he had to kind of fight his way into the NBA and all that other stuff? And then you watch, like, oh yes. His own brother gave him 49. But we've heard all kinds of crazy stuff about, wow, he doesn't do this and he doesn't do that. And it's reasonable. Except for they don't have James Wiseman. They don't have Klay Thompson. They're going to make the playoffs simply on the back of his play. If you don't understand his value, that you're always looking around, where's Steph? Essentially a guy and a half for guarding him anytime down the court. And you have to guard him from the moment he crosses over the midcourt line. I can't really help you. And I guess this is not me who misevaluated his upside in college trying to amend that. This is just the reality of how everybody in the NBA sees him. He's unbelievable. To make the playoffs with this roster is remarkable stuff. That is not a good roster. That is not a good team. And they're playing not only top competition last night, Philadelphia, granted without Ben Simmons, but Embiid didn't play, and they beat him on the road. If they get to the playoffs, this is like my Dick Bennett argument. Dick Bennett was Tony Bennett's dad, used to be the head coach at Wisconsin, then at Washington State. And I was like, he should be in the Hall of Fame. Why? He got Wisconsin to the Final Four back then. They didn't have facilities. You know, they hadn't had a history of success. Then he goes to Washington State and revives that program. all of these things are Hall of Fame worthy because of the reality, not perception, reality of where they were and the reality of what's possible at those jobs. Steph Curry getting the Warriors in the West to the playoffs and being above 500, shooting, not just making, but at this percentage is otherworldly stuff. And we have people who try and top each other with hot takes. Just sit in the hot takes. Steph Curry's the best shooter I've ever seen, and he impacts the game incredibly. Does he impact as much as LeBron? No, probably not. Because LeBron does it on offense and then on defense as well, and Steph's not nearly as impactful on defense.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Let's welcome him in. He's Kevin Clark. He works for The Ringer. He's writes stuff. He's got podcasts. Slow News Day. He does a lot. Does a lot of stuff. You can follow him on Twitter if you would like at Kevin O'Connor, at Kevin Clark. Why did I say O'Connor? My bad. At Kevin Clark, different guy. At Kevin. I'm having a day. Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing great. I get it all the time.
No, I miss that's
seriously. The Kevin O'Connor thing happens more than you would think. I was at a concert like 2 years ago, and someone came up to me and said, "I love your NBA podcast." And I said, "Do you think I'm Kevin O'Connor? Like, how did you do that? You saw my face, and that whatever. Everyone's doing their own thing."
Yeah, you know, actually, your last Slow News Day, you had one with Phil Simms. I love Phil Simms. He's like the best. He's a little bit of caricature in there and a lot of character. Yeah. He was so enjoyable during my time at CBS and such a like legit, honest friend. He's a good dude.
Yeah, I love him. And one of the things about Slow News Day we like is bringing people's personality out. And I think Phil is a good example of that, where it's just like he loves to cut loose. He's a funny guy.
Before we get to some football, I saw you tweeting about the Super League, which lasted all of 2 days. All of 2 days. What's your favorite Super League memory?
Everyone losing their job, apparently, because Manchester United's president is out, or their chairman, the Juventus guy, might be out. Like, not only this league gets scrapped within 48 hours, Doug, but everybody who thought it was a good idea might be out of work soon. So as far as watching something unfurl on Twitter, this has actually been pretty satisfying.
How would you characterize Alex Smith's career?
Amazing. In some ways, almost he was incredibly talented and he deserved to be the first one of the top picks in the draft. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers ended up better in that draft. But he almost had like a Forrest Gump-style career when you think about all the things he touched. Doug, when the New England Patriots were bringing the spread to the NFL in 2006 and 2007, they were meeting with Dan Mullen in Gainesville. Josh Jane was meeting with Dan Mullen in Gainesville, and they wanted to look at what Alex Smith was doing at Utah. That's what they were learning from, right? He comes to the NFL. He has some bumps in the road. He starts running the Harbaugh offense. That was the start of the read option stuff. He loses his job to Kaepernick. Then he ends up at Kansas City, puts up huge numbers there in some games, doesn't become an elite-level guy, but wins a bunch, and then trains Patrick Mahomes. And so you think about all the areas he touched in football, the incredible comeback. I don't know if he's certainly not one of the best quarterbacks for the last 15 years, but he is one of the best stories.
He's an incredible story, but it is interesting, right? Like, how would we view him if Aaron Rodgers wasn't from Northern California, expected to be the number one overall pick, became a great Super Bowl champion, multiple MVP quarterback, taken ahead of Aaron Rodgers, right? Like, it's interesting. And look, he got the Niners. People forget, if not for a couple of turnovers from their special teams, he played great in the NFC Championship game against the Saints, you know?
Yep.
And then he gets to Kansas City, and no, he doesn't throw any touchdown passes to wide receivers, but he made them a consistent playoff team, just Mahomes while he pipped him, really. It's just interesting on how he's been eclipsed by others, and that's at least part of the story.
Yeah, no, I mean, it trended. If you look at, kind of the Jared Goffs of the world, Doug, the guys who after 1 year do really badly, Alex Smith looked to be on that track. And the fact that he was able to grind out the career he ended up having, the fact that he made an absolute ton of money, You know, I don't think anyone can accuse him of underachieving. I don't think he obviously was not the best player in that draft. And I think that, you know, because Aaron Rodgers slipped to the 20s, I think you're looking at, and the fact that the Packers took a chance there. I don't think you can criticize the Niners or any team, because every team should have taken Aaron Rodgers. I do know Mike Nolan has said in the past that he took Alex Smith ahead of Aaron Rodgers because Alex Smith was nicer, which I don't think really matters when it comes to quarterbacks. I think, Doug, you and I both know a lot of quarterbacks, and I don't think niceness has anything to do with how good they are.
I'm gonna disagree with you a little bit here, just because. Okay. Like, look, I did this to start the show. It's like Mike Tomlin gets an extension. They're like, well, what does he really do? Like, well, you don't actually know the job of a head coach. Like, the head coach's job is not necessarily to get a whiteboard out, you know, and X and O you to death. They have to be organized. They have to motivate. Mm-hmm. They got to keep everybody. They got to let their coaches coach, but manage on the same level. I would say the same thing about quarterbacks. Like, look, I understand that it's a little weird, the relationship, Mike Nolan and others, with Alex Smith and how engaged he was. But there is a, and it has proven out as real, which is like you gotta be somebody who the other guys like and want to play for, yeah. Right? If you've met all these quarterbacks, you meet Matt Ryan, you're like, Matt Ryan's the greatest dude I've ever. Are we best friends? Should we get families together? It literally, they all have this kind of magnetic. Dak has it, right? I don't think Dak's a particularly accurate quarterback when he goes through his reads, but everybody loves him. And I think that was the hard thing with Aaron Rodgers, which he does have this kind of crusty exterior that once you get to know him, you're like, I like Aaron. Everybody's kind of got the same thing on Aaron. So I do actually understand it, because I do think it plays at least a portion of the story with quarterbacks.
I think that some quarterbacks in some markets have to function like de facto mayors, right? Like, I think Josh Allen is the most popular person in the Buffalo region.
Western
New York. I mean, like, anywhere within that, right? Josh Allen is number one. But I think there are some places where, you know, there can be other players in the team who pick up the slack in that regard if Josh Allen didn't have that magnetic personality. I think that in some cases it doesn't matter. You know, this is a different deal, Doug, but, you know, people were saying when Marcus Mariota came out, there were a lot of people saying, hey, you know, he doesn't have that kind of leadership or whatever. He's not the rah-rah guy, but he ended up, you know, leading through example in a way that I think won over teammates in Tennessee to the point they still talk about him. And I don't think that the reason Mariota failed was anything personality-wise. I just think that the offense that they were running got him hurt, or the style of play he needed to play got him hurt. So I think you can. There's a give and take there. I think quarterback needs a certain personality, but I think Aaron Rodgers has. I mean, we can't sit around and say, oh, Michael Jordan is so amazing because of the I took it personally type stuff, and then not allow a quarterback to do it. Aaron Rodgers has been defined by the chips on his shoulder, and I think that's a different personality to have than a quarterback, but I think it's one that's definitely acceptable.
That's absolutely positively fair. It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of Kevin Clark. By Kevin Clark is his Twitter handle. Let's get to Kyle Shanahan. I think we all regard him as a really bright guy who's done incredible stuff with quarterbacks. And most of the quarterbacks that he's had the most success with are guys that, you know, from Kirk Cousins to Matt Schaub, even Matt Ryan, not they don't pass the eye test in terms of skill set. Now they trade up. Now you can't get the best one. You probably don't get the second best. You don't get the second best one, right? But you have a chance to choose at least from at least two, possibly three others. And we hear Mac Jones. And Mac Jones does kind of remind you of Kirk Cousins more than he reminds you of a superstar quarterback. And then you got Justin Fields, you got Trey Lance, guys that look like, feel like Trey Lance feels like Josh Allen, right? Yeah, I mean, feels like a little bit inaccurate, size, school he plays at, everything. What do you think he actually does?
It's interesting, because I think that when this first came down, you know, Albert Breer had the report that what the Niners wanted was control. They didn't want a specific quarterback. They just knew they wanted to upgrade a quarterback, raise the ceiling, and then that, you know, they knew that they had to be at number three because Wilson and Lawrence are going to be off the board there, and then you get your pick of three guys, right? And the more I think about it, if you're really going to make that move, it would feel like a Fields or a Lance. But Chris Sims is smarter than I am when it comes to football. Michael Lombardi is more plugged in with certain front offices than I am. I mean, people who – Adam Schefter, Daniel Jeremiah, the more smoke that comes out here, Occam's razor is that it feels like it's going to be Mac Jones, only because a Mac Jones rumor to me is so strange, Doug, that there has to be a reason behind it, right? Like, it's not even a good smokescreen. Maybe it's the greatest smokescreen of all time, and the front office of the 49ers has convinced everybody this is going to happen. But I don't remember a smokescreen this good. If it does end up happening, it does end up being a Trey Lance or a Justin Fields. So if I were to put money on it right now, which I wouldn't do, I would go Mac Jones. But I find the whole trade-up strange. If that's what investing pre-first-round picks in Mac Jones is not something that I would guess a smart organization does. But the Niners are a smart organization, so who knows?
I'm convinced Kyle Pitts is an X-Men. Prove me wrong.
I completely agree with you. And the funny thing is that you hear the draft gurus and some scouts talk about it. And, you know, if you wanted to nitpick, you could say, okay, well, he's not that great. You know, he might not be the prototypical, a standard traditional tight end, whatever. And then there's people saying, okay, fine, make him a receiver. He's still worth the fifth pick in the draft, right? Like, that's the funny thing. Even if you're nitpicking, just get rid of those elements of his game and make him a pass catcher full time. Don't even have him blocked. Don't even have him put his hand in the dirt. The fact that he can do that only adds to it. And so I think he's amazing. I think he's worth a fifth round pick. I think it's funny, Doug, I still think because of the reputation of tight ends, and especially top 10 tight ends, because they're front offices move slowly here. I do think there are some GMs who are still a little gun shy about pulling the trigger on a tight end that high, just because it doesn't happen very often, and they have kind of outdated ideas of positional value. But I think that Kyle Pitts is a game changer in any offense.
I tend to agree with you. It'd be interesting to see what Atlanta does at four. If they get out of that spot, if they take him, they go Penei Sewell, or what they do. Kevin, awesome stuff. I appreciate you rolling with us, and thanks for being our guest on Fox Sports Radio.
Anytime, Doug. Thanks, man.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Let's catch up with Mike Sando. He joins us, of course. He's an officer with the Pro Football Writers of America. You say officer and people freak out. You're like, no. He's also a selector for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He writes for The Athletic. He joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. And, oh, yeah, by the way, he hosts the Seahawks Roundtable, and he lives and works in Seattle. Did you know the Mariners are off to a good start?
I did know that. I don't know much more than that, embarrassingly. So that's an old thing. The Seahawks Roundtable. Wow, you must have a bio from like the 90s. That's been a while.
No. I was trying to relate it to, we were just randomly killing time because you're about to pop on talking about the baseball game, which is on my monitor. And I just kind of tried to drop that out there. Okay. Speaking of the Seahawks, like let's start in the old stomping grounds. Speaking of the Seahawks, they had that weird kind of month. They're like, are they really going to trade Russell Wilson? And they're like, nah, they're not going to trade Russell Wilson. What's your guess of what the Seahawks look like when they take the field in September?
Well, I think he's going to be their quarterback, Russell Wilson, but I think the wheels are in motion for there to be an alternate ending to this relationship, right? He's got multiple years left on his deal. Don't feel entirely confident he's going to see the end of it. I just don't think it was that practical to do something right now. Clearly, he gives them their best chance. There wasn't a great alternative for them, but I think it's to be continued. The interesting part is, like, all that stuff about Wilson complaining about the line and stuff, he's been playing real nice lately. So, that is what I think will continue probably through the offseason and into the year, and we'll see what happens. If they have a disappointing exit, I'm sure there will be some narrative coming out of the next year, too.
It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. I saw where Carolina's looking to get out of eight now that they have Sam Darnold. Is it fair to say that their plan A was Deshaun Watson, their plan B was Mac Jones, and now Darnold is their plan C? Is that fair?
Yeah. It could have been moving up, you know, for whether it's for Mac Jones or for somebody else. But yeah, I think now they've got Darnold. The fascinating part about that, Doug, is it, like, if you talk to evaluators about the quarterbacks in this draft, and I'm going to ask Randy Mueller this when we do our podcast this afternoon, where would you put Darnold among those prospects, right? Because when we talk about draft prospects, usually we see this limitless ceiling, right? Like, they could be anything. They could be amazing. But, like, Darnold, a lot of people in the league might slot him in, like, fourth among this class, or third or fourth even. And when you hear that, you go, wow, that's sort of like a reality check for the prospects that are coming out, right? It's sort of because people perceive Darnold as somewhat of a failure.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I'm not sure. I think nobody really knows. Like, we know the flaws. We know there's been some, you know, 2 years ago, even with Mono, he had a really good season considering the supporting cast. But we don't know what he looks like with a legit football team around him. And I guess the Carolina's going to gamble and think he can be better when he has a great running back and maybe a new built team around him.
Yeah. The main thing is you can sort of keep trying, right? Their GM is Scott Fitterer. He was in Seattle when they had Matt Flynn, Charlie Whitehurst, Matt Hasselbeck, Russell Wilson just almost throwing darts. And it's like, I think they realized, we know what Teddy Bridgewater is. We don't want to look at that forever, right? That we don't want that to be forever. So there's a risk that Darnold isn't as good. There's a chance that he's better. We'll try him. They didn't give up a ton. I mean, they gave up a 6th-round pick this year, a 2 and a 4 next year. You can get a 2 by next year, right? I mean, just by some other move. Maybe you trade somebody that you weren't going to keep anyway, whatever. So it's a relatively low-cost flyer, other than they're going to lock in on the option. But that's fine. 2 years, you know, for a below top of the market for sure, and give it a try and move on if it doesn't work.
Mike Sanda joining us, Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Any idea what happens at 3 with San Francisco?
You know, I think Mac Jones is who I've got in there for on my list, and that's, you know, I talked to a lot of people in the league, and there's varying opinions, but that's probably the number one opinion. And so I'm not going to overthink it and come off of it, but I think we're all anxious to find out without really knowing.
Yeah, it's weird, though, right? Because he does feel like a guy Shanahan has made successful before. If you look at Kirk Cousins, if you look at Matt Schaub, if you look at Matt Ryan, right? He feels like one of those guys. But to move up to 3... That feels like a lot of risk and an exorbitantly high draft pick. And then also, if you're going to keep Garoppolo and sit in behind Garoppolo, you want more of a developmental guy, which feels like Lance or Justin Fields.
Maybe. That's a lot of thinking. Here's the reality in today's NFL. And I thought Peter King had a great note on this. He like went through like the last 40 years of drafting quarterbacks. There's been a huge change to how early they go. Okay, the last 20 years, and we've seen it increasingly lately, just to get one of the top 4 or 5 guys, you've got to be up high. So I separate the decision that the 49ers made to get up to 3 into 2 parts. One is, where do we need to go that we can even have a chance to get a guy we like? And then number 2 is, who is that guy? And I think what we risk doing in analyzing this is saying, well, I wouldn't go up to the 3rd overall pick to get Mac Jones. But what that does is it disregards the whole recent years of Jared Goff's and Carson Wentz's and other guys who weren't perfect prospects by any means either. And in some years might have been a late 1st or a 2nd round pick, but now to even play, to even swim in those waters, you just have to get to 3 or 4. If they get to 8, they might as well be at 12. They don't know. They don't even know if they're going to get one.
Mike Sanders joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. What about Lance and Fields? They both had the 2nd pro day, which is a lot like the private workout, which you can't have. The people in the NFL, you know, how do they? What type of regard do they hold them in?
Yeah, like Fields, a lot of people are like, why isn't he being seen as higher? And maybe it's just because people think Kyle Shanahan's going to take Mac Jones. Maybe it's just one guy who really wants Mac Jones. We'll find out. But I think he's in, you know, pretty high regard. When I had a general manager project the top 10 last week, He had, of course, Lawrence, and then he had Wilson, and then he put Mac Jones to San Francisco, and then he actually had Justin Fields going to Atlanta. Like, they wouldn't pass that up. So I think he's in high regard. And then, you know, Lance is just a little raw, right? I mean, I think he's got 300 and some pass attempts and not too many of them lately. And so you feel like there's a little bit of a longer runway with him, a little less known, but, you know, I think he's still going to go probably in the top 10.
No question. The question becomes, does Josh Allen end up helping his stock?
It just takes one general manager to need a quarterback and be up there, right? And that's what creates the rolling of the dice. I mean, yeah, when you need one, you can fall in love with one. They can't all go out and pick Pat Mahomes.
They cannot, although they'd like to. They definitely would like to. It's Doug Gottlieb's show here on Fox Sports Radio. You know, the Garoppolo thing is interesting. Do you think he's in San Francisco for the season?
I think that's an open question. If I had to bet everything I had on one or the other, I'd probably go towards yes, because things would have to happen for him not to be there. But I think it's really fluid, and it's probably a combination of they don't know for sure on the guy they're getting, and once they get him in their building, how great they'll feel about him. And then they don't know, they can't get enough for Garoppolo right now to justify trading him. And so why not wait, right? Protect yourself. There's still a long time this offseason they have to make that decision. And I think it could result in him being traded, but it's just not the time.
Yeah, no, it isn't the time, but at some point, you know, we've seen after the draft when the Eagles went and got Wentz, they waited until somebody got hurt, of course, in Minnesota, and they got a first-round draft pick for Sam Bradford. Maybe that's what they're thinking. Hold on to him. Maybe we wait to see what happens with Deshaun Watson. I know they have Tyron Smith. Tyrod Taylor there in case he doesn't play. But maybe they're waiting for somebody desperate. Last thing, what does Denver do at quarterback?
Denver is obviously going to have Drew Locke. They may be the team that ends up taking whichever one of those quarterbacks makes it that far. I think they would definitely be in that conversation. I think that they could be later down the line, maybe a place that Teddy Bridgewater lands. Obviously there's a connection between Bridgewater and George Payton, who used to be in Minnesota and is now the general manager there. But yeah, the GM is in his first year. He knows he's going to have to do it. Maybe he doesn't have to make the all-in move now.
Mike, great stuff. Really appreciate you joining us, and look forward to talking to you as we get closer and closer to the draft. Thanks for being our guest on Fox Sports Radio.
Thank you.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Up on my Twitter page pops a quote from my man, Jason Smith. Now, Jason's a good friend, and, you know, listen, I'll just tell him. It's a terrible, terrible take he has. Terrible. But he's allowed to have it because we're in the opinion business, and he actually, if you listen to his reasoning and logic behind it, yes. But I mean, who hasn't had a take that everybody said is terrible before? But instead of just crushing him, like, let's have him on and have him kind of break down this horrendous take that he has. Jason Smith joining us. Of course, you can hear him at night here on Fox Sports Radio. Well, 7 to 11 Pacific. That's 10 to 2 a.m. East Coast time. It's on essentially everywhere in the country. So why do you hate Steph Curry? That's really what it comes down to.
Wait, I think the Mariners are the new Yankees. I thought I was calling to talk about that. Wait, we're talking about Steph?
Yes.
Oh, wow. I had my all Mariners and the new Yankees take ready. Now, listen, I don't hate Steph. Steph is a terrific player. He is a fantastic player. He is the best shooter that I have ever seen. And what is going on the last few days is that Steph Curry has been on a great tear, right? We've seen it before. We've seen Kobe Bryant on a tear like this before. It's great. He is a show. He is fun to watch. The impact on the standings with Steph Curry, when he's now leading this team, they're 6-5 during this run. Okay, they're in ninth place in the Western Conference. So when I see the, you know, Steph Curry for MVP, okay, well, hang on a second. First of all, that's ridiculous. That's the worst take that I've seen yet. I don't know what, where you are on Steph Curry MVP.
Why, I wouldn't vote him as MVP, but why is it a horrendous take? Because is that a good basketball team?
MVP.
No. MVP is most valuable player.
Sure.
Okay. I believe you've said that Julius Randle should be the MVP.
If you're talking about Steph Curry for MVP, Julius Randle has a better take, has a better statement, because they are in the middle of the pack in the East. There's been no big changes.
East sucks,
to the team.
Dude. The East sucks.
Are you kidding me?
The East sucks. Yes. No, I'm not kidding you.
Did you say the Big East?
I said the East sucks.
I thought you said the Big East.
I said the East. The East stinks. The East is not good.
What he's doing doesn't matter. So what he's doing this year doesn't matter.
No, but you have to have context to it. Right?
The Knicks were absolutely terrible. They have been absolutely terrible for a long time.
Yes.
What's the difference in the team this year? Julius Randle. So now they go from 15 wins, and now they're over 30. I mean, that's a huge difference.
Well, part of it is that half the rest of the league, especially the East, isn't playing their better players. Right? Like the Brooklyn Nets has literally not played their big three together most of the season. You know, the Boston Celtics have been a disappointment, but they've also been mired with injuries. Last night, for example, when the Warriors beat the Sixers, Ben Simmons didn't play. Like, the league's not playing all their guys. So what's the difference to the Knicks? Julius Randle is a portion of it, but they're also better coached, and there's also a whole cast of characters. Like, do you value at all PER?
Somewhat. It depends. Is it in line with some of the players on other stars on the team? Yeah. It's one of those, like, the plus-minus. You know, for NBA. If the plus minus is kind of in line with how a team is doing in that game, I don't really think about it. But if everybody is plus on the team, if everybody's plus 13 for the game and you have somebody who's minus 4, okay, that you kind of have to look at because that stands out. That's the outlier.
Okay. I'm still searching for Julius Randle on the PER list. In terms of PER, Steph Curry is 4th to Jokic, Giannis, and Zion. Right, then Kawhi, Jimmy Butler, Robert Williams is the outlier in the top 10 in PER in the NBA. I mean, like, look, dude, if you want to tell me that they're just an okay team, I'm going to agree with you with Steph Curry. They don't have Klay Thompson. They don't currently have James Wiseman either. They're not a particularly good roster, and he's doing extraordinary stuff. And like, I don't know, you don't think he's a player that affects winning. Does he affect winning as much as maybe LeBron or some of the two-way guys? Probably not. But his three-point shooting has changed the entire league and changes how you guard them. Changes everything.
But does it matter if guys aren't playing their guys? You just said, hey, teams aren't playing their guys. So when people are achieving, where do you want to put it? Either Julius Randle's playing well or he isn't. But it can't be Julius Randle's not playing well, and Steph Curry is because of the competition they have going on.
Is the
it can't
East,
be both ways.
Is the East or the West a more difficult conference?
The West is more difficult.
Okay.
The West is extreme. I am giving you the West is extremely more difficult. Steph Curry, if he's that great a player right now, and he's someone who should have them higher if he's that great a player.
What are you talking about?
They should be higher in the standings. If he was that good, they shouldn't be 500 in ninth place behind Memphis, behind Dallas, behind Portland, because he's the best player out of anybody on those teams, right? So you should be able to raise the level of that team. We've seen great players. Nikola Jokic is an MVP conversation
yes.
in front of it. Why?
Yes.
Because Denver is 17 games over 500. They're winning games. Look, I mean, look, now we're going to see without Jamal Murray, because, you know, he's a guy that makes that team go and he doesn't get as much respect as he should. But, hey, Nikola Jokic is there because Denver's achieving. Why is Joel Embiid at the top? Because the Sixers went from, hey, we brought in a new coach, but Joel Embiid decided he had that mid-career Shaq resurgence of, hey, I want to be about more than just being a fun star, and look at where the Sixers are. So to be the MVP, you have to achieve with your team. And I can't say the MVP is a guy who right now would be in the play-in game and is three games out of eighth place. I can't do it. I mean, this is a Warriors team. They still have Draymond Green.
You have to factor it, but you have to factor in they don't have Klay Thompson. So a team that's built around two stars, you know, two star scorers and Draymond and then other pieces. And you were starting, you know, a rookie who had barely played in college in the pros with very little offseason and preparation time, right? in a far tougher division? Like, do you think Luka is a great player?
Yeah, Luka is a great player. I'm not saying Steph Curry is not a great player.
Do you think he affects winning? Do you think he's in an MVP discussion?
Yes, but not at the top. I have Embiid at the top of my MVP list. I thought he's been the guy all season long. He's the guy that stepped up across the board. Yes, he was hurt a little bit, but clearly the Sixers made the big jump, and with no big changes, he's been the guy. So I have him at the top for me.
Okay, but Steph Curry would be in the conversation.
You know what he'd be in the conversation? Yes. If this was a team that was in fifth place.
It has to do with what place they're in, the middle of the pack.
Yeah, because that's what MVP is.
No, it's not player of the year.
MVP is the most. They could be out of the playoffs with Steph Curry. They could be out of the playoffs without Steph Curry.
Without Steph Curry, they're the worst team in the league, Jason. Last year, they were the worst team in the league.
Okay.
They were the worst team in the league. I'll use your argument against you, right? He plays this year. They go from the worst team in the league to a playoff team. Okay. So, I don't know, you're actually, again, this is the problem with all of these arguments. Like, this is the problem with Skip's argument about Steph Curry, which is, well, like, you know, I like James Harden. Well, okay, well, your problem with LeBron James is what he hasn't done in the postseason, even though he's won NBA titles, right? But you like James Harden above Steph Curry when Steph Curry's been better in the postseason. If your argument is, what is this team without him? You're like, well, they're not a playoff team. No, they're not a playoff team. They were the worst team in the West. If you don't believe me, look it up. Now, take Steph Curry off the team, they're the worst team in the West. Put him on the team, and they're above 500, and they're a playoff team in a far more difficult division. You can't make a stronger argument than that.
They're in ninth place. Okay, they're in the brand new playoffs where we're expanding the playoffs now, and maybe they're in the play-in game because they're just as close from getting up into sixth as they are from being out of the play-in. Okay, so you got to take the whole season into account.
I am.
You can't just say, here's the last 11 games, the whole season last year,
he averaged in 41 points a game. Right? He's on the type of heater we have never seen before.
He is. He's on a great heater. He is on a phenomenal heater. But it's these last 11 games. Okay, that's great. And they're 6-5. If LeBron did the exact same thing. Let me tell you something.
If LeBron didn't have Anthony Davis?
This is why Steph Curry enjoys this kind of reputation. All right? Because he is one of the rarest guys in sports that has an unassailable image. That there's nothing that anytime you say something that disagrees with, boy, how great Steph is, it's, oh, you're ridiculous. Him and Patrick Mahomes have the best images in all of sports, right? These are the guys everybody desires to be. Hey, I want to be able to have that where no one questions me. It's just the way it is. If LeBron James is doing the exact same thing as Steph Curry, right? Let's just flip it out. LeBron is playing
for the Warriors.
You mean like
his first year, first year with the Lakers?
Right now.
Like the first year with the Lakers.
Why can't I finish my point?
I will. I'm pointing out your point. Your point is, if LeBron is doing his thing, the first year with the Lakers, LeBron was on the roster. They didn't make the playoffs. It was all about the roster and the need for Anthony Davis. It wasn't about LeBron James.
Okay, and it was an entire load management season for him where he knew they weren't going to make it to the finals, so he's out for a long time in the middle of the season. He knew, I'm going to save the tread on my tires, right? It was a load management year for him, right? But I'm saying if you put LeBron right now, if LeBron James is on the Warriors, right? Let's just say we've watched the last 11 games of him doing this. It's phenomenal stuff. Half the people are saying, but they're not winning. LeBron is not winning. Look, but they're only 6-5. He doesn't even have them in the playoffs. He doesn't have him in. Why? Because LeBron is polarizing, right? Lots of stars are polarizing. They would say that for Kevin Durant. They would say that for many other players. They would say, but look what they're doing. Yeah, he's been great, but are they even going to make the playoffs? They're disappointing. But Steph Curry has them in ninth, and suddenly this is the greatest thing in the world, and there's no room for any other opinion on it. Look, I get it. I get that he is a terrific player, and he's a great player. But let's be fair when it's, okay, what are we really accomplishing? You know, is he accomplishing? Is he raising the level of the team? How they're in ninth.
Yes.
They should be better. They should be better with
How
him.
Should they be better?
They should be. If he's that great a player, they should be better. He should be lifting them up.
How?
Because he
How?
Doesn't
Explain.
Affect the game.
Wait.
He doesn't affect the game.
What are you talking about? He has the fourth highest PER. I just pointed out. He has the fourth highest PER. He doesn't have a second best player.
He doesn't affect the game as the other guys who play two ways. You just told me. He doesn't affect the same way as the guys that play both ways and do more things.
No, but he's
a shooter. He does one thing. He does that extremely well, right? And within the flow of the offense, he does that, right? He went from being a periphery all-star.
Do you watch
player.
The basketball games when you're sitting here in this chair?
I watch the games every night, man.
No, he's just a shooter. He's just a shooter.
He's someone who is the best shooter I have ever seen. And so that's
just,
one great.
He's just a shooter.
Tell me, how great is he on defense? How great of a player is he defensively?
He's not as bad as James Harden.
Okay, well,
I'm giving you the base. Yes. I'm giving you the baseline, the basement. Okay, he's clearly not Kawhi Leonard, and he doesn't affect defending the rim the way that Joel Embiid does. But he actually, he roams around, he gets steals. He's effective in his own way. He's not a great defender. He's probably not a good defender, but he's a very smart defender. He's a very good passer. So he creates shots for himself. He creates shots for others. You always have your head in a swivel. And the idea that he doesn't help this team, they're without Klay Thompson, who's a borderline Hall of Fame type of player. They're without James Wiseman, who's their starting center. Okay. He took on a team that last year was the worst team in the NBA, and now in the tougher conference in the NBA, they're in line to likely make the playoffs. You said he doesn't affect the team. He doesn't affect it enough. Like, I don't really know what you're actually searching for.
LeBron James was on the Lakers.
He should be higher.
That's what I said the whole time.
LeBron James was on the Lakers. Okay? He was on the Lakers. And they were in fourth place when he got hurt 2 years ago, and then he came back and they were a bit of a mess. And it wasn't that all of a sudden they started winning again. They didn't. They actually lost to the Grizzlies and the Mavericks and the Suns, teams that were tanking and trying to lose. LeBron James was losing to those teams, and they didn't make the playoffs. And they fired the coach, and Magic Johnson resigned, and then they made this trade, and they got Anthony Davis. The exact same guy that you said affects winning more was impervious to the same criticism and had his team in a worse spot despite the fact that he played essentially the exact same role as what Steph's playing. So, I love you. I love working with you. But you told me what does he do to affect the team, and I gave you they were the worst team in the NBA last year. They still don't have Klay, and they don't have James Wiseman, and they're four games above 500 in the West, which is a miraculous accomplishment, all things considered.
All right, let me give you this then. You want to use LeBron.
Yes.
How many horrible teams did LeBron play with in the Eastern Conference with the Cavaliers? Many, many.
Horrible teams
when your second best player is Anderson Varejão. Okay, you're playing with teams that it's just a bunch of guys.
Well, this is a longer discussion that we don't have time for.
It is. But what I'm saying is that, here's my point, is that if LeBron, can take a team like that and get them to the NBA Finals every year.
I don't know. Allen Iverson did the same thing. It's the Eastern Conference.
Steph Curry. But you're still getting to the finals. Steph Curry is not even.
But we don't know because he doesn't play in the Eastern Conference.
They're in ninth place. They should be. If he's an all-time great, it shouldn't matter. Right? He should have them above teams. Some of these teams, if he's an all-time great. He should have them above that.
That's just not the reality of the sport, dude. That's just not the reality of the sport. If Michael Jordan didn't win before he had Scottie Pippen. I'm like, no, duh. You can't win by yourself. Nobody's ever won by themselves. It has never happened. And you can point out that LeBron James, Allen Iverson had the exact same thing. You go back through the East, and they were all one-offs of the Pistons had the 1 year, with Rasheed Wallace and Chauncey Billups. And the 76ers had the year. It's because the East was a joke, okay? And then he goes to Miami, and he's like, all right, let's take Chris Bosh from Toronto. Now they're done. They have no players. And we'll take me from Cleveland. Now we have no players, and now I'm in Miami, and we have players, and nobody else does. And, of course, they dominated the East because the East has been a notch below the West. It has been. It's slightly better now than it used to be, and if the Nets would actually play all of their guys, it would be, at least at the top, equal to the top of the teams at the West. But you can't make an argument about the East 15 years ago when making an argument about Steph Curry today. If you want to put Steph Curry on the 76ers that Allen Iverson took to the finals, my guess is he'd do the same thing because that team was an amazing defensive team coached by Larry Brown, and it was a terrible year in the East, and they went to the NBA Finals. But he plays in the West, and you're comparing incomparables.
When Steph has won, He's won with Klay Thompson, with Draymond Green. When Draymond Green's the MVP of the league.
Nobody wins in the West by themselves.
When they had a great bench, when you had a guy coming off the bench who was the NBA Finals MVP, then they couldn't win.
He averaged like 7 points a game,
dude.
Because
at the end of the finals, Steph Curry couldn't get his shot. They lost to the Cavaliers. What did they do? Let's bring in Kevin Durant. And then they won two more. And Kevin Durant's your NBA Finals MVP. Steph has only won when he has been surrounded by incredible talent. Good talent.
Is Magic Johnson a great player?
Magic Johnson's great. All-time great player. Sure,
all-time great. Like a top
Magic Johnson,
five, like a top,
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Like Magic Johnson, all-time great player. Top five all-time?
Top five, top 10, sure. Yeah.
Top 10?
Yeah, at least. Yeah, I mean, do you want to go through the top five players all-time in the NBA?
I mean, in his era, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird saved the NBA. Did he win every NBA Finals? No. Was he surrounded by great players? Yes. Okay. It just so happens that at that level, like we do the whole, you know, you want to do the, he needed Andre Iguodala. Andre Iguodala was left wide open so they could have five guys guard four. He was left wide open. That's why he had 30 in a finals game. They literally left him wide open. And then the next year they left Harrison Barnes wide open and he didn't make those same shots. And oh yeah, by the way, Andrew Bogut got hurt, didn't play games 5, 6, and 7, and Draymond got suspended. And yeah, by the way, they played against an all-time great roster in Cleveland, and they had an all-time great roster, and they lost in an incredible game 7. That's what happened. So you can sit here and go like, well, we could, when you want to, it's like the Bible. If you want to take one little verse from the Bible and make a grand pronouncement of it, like, okay, when you take the entirety of it, he's been an incredible shooter, scorer, passer. His teams, when he and they have been healthy, have dominated the NBA. And this year, with a crummy roster, which people are like, man, what are they doing? They should just shut him down for the season, not make the playoffs, load up for another draft pick, figure out how to get rid of Kelly Oubre, who they just got. Instead, he's going to turn lemonade from lemons and make the playoffs. I got to go, okay? I'm way over time. I do appreciate you joining me and arguing with me for 20 minutes.
It's all good, man. I'll talk to you soon.
That's Jason Smith, author of The Worst Take This Week on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.